brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Colonel Chuck.
No.
Admiral.
Jeez.
Flight coordinator.
I'm a potato peeler.
Camp counselor.
Yes.
Camp counselor Charles W. Chuck Bryant. I'll with me as always. How you doing, Chuck?
Hey, it's November.
I know. Happy November.
November 1, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the first day in November.
Did you get any trick-or-treaters?
No.
Nothing?
I have two sets of steps that lead up to my front door, and apparently kids are fat and lazy these days, and diabetic.
Did they, like, yell, throw something down here to the street?
No. No, we left after a while. We just don't get anybody who comes to our house.
Did you get candy?
No, not this year. We had before, and we just we sat there and ended up eating all of it. And
no one comes to our house either.
Yeah. So that's good.
At all.
Why?
Oh, like our neighbors don't. It's sort of like as you come around the bend, coming from the other way, from the Decatur side. Mm-hmm. That's sort of where it ends. The trick or treating, like the bend in the road, just it like approaches Memorial Drive, and people, it just gets scary, and like there's a bus stop, and people turn their lights off. My neighbors are old; they don't get into it. So
gotcha.
I think that's just sort of the demarcation.
Did you guys get candy?
No, we never. I mean, we never do.
So. Basically,
it stinks, man. I'm ready for like trick or treaters.
Did you dress up at all?
Well, for that stupid show I did.
But... Oh yeah, that's right. You dressed up as Paul Stanley.
Yeah.
In a 3-piece suit.
Yeah.
Looking good.
Hey.
I think if you ask me, we should post that picture.
Yeah, I'll post one.
Okay, good.
All right.
Chuck.
Yes.
You know Jay Carney is a family friend of my family's.
I did not know that.
Well, he's not.
Okay.
I actually got what I'm about to read off of the White House website.
Okay.
I couldn't mislead you. I was started to and I just stopped. It's so far, it's been a typically busy week for President Barack Obama. Monday, he went to Las Vegas.
Sweet.
Delivered some remarks. Went to L.A.
Probably pulled a slot or two.
Probably.
Yeah.
You have to if you go to Vegas.
Just on your way
out. Or else everybody's like, get out of here.
Right.
Then he went to L.A. Stayed in L.A. overnight. Right about now, he is doing the Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
Oh, yeah?
Should be on tonight.
Terrible.
Then he goes to San Francisco, Denver, and then he heads back to D.C. Wednesday.
That's
so
a lot
that
of
he
flying.
Can meet with the Prime Minister of the Czech Republic, Petr Nekas.
Right.
That is a lot of flying.
More important than Jay Leno.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're a Coco fan, aren't you?
Team Coco. Yeah. I mean, even if Conan O'Brien didn't exist, I would still think Jay Leno's bad.
Did you ever see Night Shift, I think is what it was called? About
sure.
The late night, the first late night war between Jay Leno and Dave Letterman?
Yeah, yeah, that was good.
That was real good. Okay, well, aside from that part, yes, you're absolutely right. That's a lot of flying. And every step of the way, Mr. President Barack Obama is going to be aboard a luxury, decked out 747 with a tail number of either 28,000 or 29,000.
That's right.
You know how I know that?
Because it's written right here in this wonderful article.
Yes, this article called How Air Force One Works on HowStuffWorks.com. If you're not familiar, you know, a lot of people think like we just, this is our job, podcasting. They don't put that together with the site.
Yeah. You should visit the site.
Yeah, we work for a website called HowStuffWorks.com, if you know now.
The mystery is solved.
And how Air Force One works is on
that
site.
And we say that said that 375 times, but people still don't get it.
It's true. Like, what's your email address?
Yeah.
So, Chuckers, you want to do some history first?
Oh, why not?
Before you read this article, had you heard of Air Force One?
I had heard of Air Force One. I had not heard of the Guess Where Two.
No. Let's start it out because the presidential air travel is fairly new, right?
Yeah. Up until World War II, it wasn't very practical to fly around, and one might even say dangerous. And you were cut off mainly because you were cut off from communications, largely.
Right. Yeah, the telegraph, like, no, yeah. I want that bill pushed through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But in 1943, FDR said, you know what? I want to take my wheelchair up on this Boeing 314.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to take a little trip to Casablanca. And that was the first presidential flight.
Yeah, and he actually took that flight for practical reasons. It was because the Germans,
mm-hmm.
had the Atlantic completely under lockdown, basically.
Didn't want to take a boat in those days.
Yeah, he was like, no, I'm not going, so I'll just fly. And it went smashingly. And from that point on,
yeah,
everybody said, maybe the president should fly.
They said, this boating thing stinks. We should fly places.
Yeah.
It's much more efficient.
Yeah, even a flying boat wouldn't do. We just want a flying plane.
That's right.
Yeah.
So coming up next, I've got six planes before the new set. That was number one. Number two was a C-87A Liberator Express, and it was pretty much a B-24 bomber that was, you know, tricked out civilian style.
Right. There's padding on the armrest.
Exactly. And that was called the Guess Where Two.
Right.
Which is the worst plane name ever.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty, like, typical 40s, like, engineer.
Bad.
It's like a Colonel John Paul Stapp
name. Yeah, the Guess Where Two.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad. The third plane, well, another C-87 crashed, and they said, you know what, this might not be the best plane because we don't know exactly why it crashed.
Yeah.
We don't want to put the president in there. So then they configured a C-54 Skymaster for that same president because he was president for, like, 60 years.
Yeah.
And it had sleeping quarters, a radio telephone, a retractable elevator for his wheelchair.
Very nice.
And it was named the Sacred Cow. Better name?
Better than the Guess Where Two?
Yeah.
It's up there.
Okay.
I mean, it's okay. It definitely reminds me of our agrarian past.
Yeah. All right, am I covering history here? You got the Truman Show next. Took over the Sacred Cow, replaced it with a DC-6 called the Independence.
Yeah. Now, he was from Missouri, so that makes sense that he would call it the Independence.
Sure.
Independence, Missouri.
And it's the United States.
But I also got the impression that he basically... It was a garish plane that had, like, an eagle on the front and all sorts of patriotic decorations.
Yeah, nothing else had been decorated up to that point.
It was like the Statue of Liberty threw up on this plane.
I haven't seen a picture of it, actually.
No, but I could see Truman being, like, real enthusiastic, like, yeah, and
oh,
put
sure.
that there and that there. And,
yeah.
You know, go shoot a commie over there.
How about Betty Boop up front? So our boys know. Know something. Eisenhower introduced two propeller planes, upgraded the equipment, including, for the first time, air-to-ground telephone and air-to-ground teletype, which was the first computer. It's not true.
No, teletype was like fax, right?
Yeah,
it
kidding.
Was like the bouncing ball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. That was the fourth and fifth sets of planes.
Right. Well, hold on. So far, a couple of landmarks have happened, right? They decked it out for Roosevelt. It wasn't just a civilian craft any longer. There was
sure.
like some fly stuff going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Truman added a couple of other backup planes that were twin planes.
Yeah, which is big.
Okay. And then now where are we on to?
Now we're on to Kennedy, who in 1958, they finally got with the plan, and they got Boeing 707 jumbo jets, and they officially called them Air Force One, with their radio call designation.
Right. That was Eisenhower.
That was Eisenhower?
Yeah. During Eisenhower's administration, the Air Force adopted the 707s and started calling them Air Force One. And then when Kennedy took over and everybody was crazy for all things presidential, Air Force One caught on.
For the public.
Right.
Because he probably went on and said Air Force One at some point.
But he also redecorated it tastefully in the same way that it's decorated today.
Which is nice.
Yeah,
Very handsome plane.
It's timeless.
Yeah.
Because you don't look at it and be like, no.
That navy
60s.
Blue, yeah, it's not the vessel sink of airplanes.
Right.
Homeowners know what I'm talking about. So Kennedy added a more advanced 707 that could fly a little longer, but it was still a 707. Like you said, redesigned it to his, probably Jackie's taste. Let's get real.
Yeah.
And added a twin plane to that fleet in 1972, and that was a very famous plane because that flew him to Dallas and then flew his body back from Dallas.
I know. The way that it's put in this article is so grim but just dead on. It says that on November 22nd, 1963, it flew him to Dallas and then brought his body back later that day, which is crazy. You know, you think about him on that flight on the way out there and then...
Exactly.
And then on the way back... Johnson was sworn in.
Very famously.
Aboard Air Force One.
Yeah, that photo is very famous.
And then the twin 707 flew Nixon to, I guess, Yorba Linda, California, the day he resigned.
Is that where he lived?
Yeah,
is that where he was from?
Well, that's where his library is, I believe, is Yorba Linda. But, Chuck, something else kind of big happened that leads us to a very important fact about Air Force One.
Go ahead.
Mid-flight, the flight crew got word that Ford had been sworn in as president, and they changed the call sign for the flight from Air Force One to SMS.
SAM.
Special Air Mission.
SAM.
27,000. And the reason they did that is because the only the plane that the President of the United States is currently aboard can be called Air Force One.
That's right.
Nixon was no longer president, so it was no longer Air Force One.
So technically, the big plane that we all think of as Air Force One isn't even Air Force One unless the president is riding in it.
Right.
But we're going to call it Air Force One because that's what people do.
Yeah, we're not jerks, you know? But it is, it's the call sign for a plane, not specifically a plane.
I bet that was depressing. I wonder if they announced it to Nixon, like, and by the way, this is no longer Air Force One. This is SAM 27,000. And Nixon just put his head in his hands.
Yeah.
That was it.
I could see that.
At least they didn't just crash it.
You know? They just jump out. They're like, yeah. So long.
So long, sucker. Good luck.
So those were the 707s. They kept flying all through Reagan.
Yeah.
First half of Bush Sr.'s term.
Yeah.
And then they were replaced by 747s that are around today.
That's right. And the article says that could replace them as early as 2010, which is the 20-year mark.
Mm-hmm.
Not so. 2017 is when they're looking to replace these now.
It's like a Delta flight or something.
Yeah. So it's either going to be another 747-8 or a 787 Dreamliner.
Dude, that is a money plane.
I checked it out. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, those are nice. They have a really big bar in it.
Yeah.
I think that's... No, it's the Airbus that Emirates fly, the Airbus.
Well, there's different configurations, but if you click Dreamliner, Boeing 787 Dreamliner interior and look at the Google images, it's pretty amazing.
And that's just the standard one. I mean, presidential planes typically are outfitted and appointed very nicely.
Well, and we're there, so let's go. It is appointed nicely.
Well, Tom Harris, who wrote this article, compares it generally to like a really nice hotel or a very nice office building.
Yeah.
But it's a plane instead.
Yeah. And there's also Marine One. We don't want to shortchange the helicopter cousin of Air Force One,
which is a Chinook, which is my favorite helicopter.
And it's pretty sweet too on the inside. I mean, it's like a smaller, nice apartment.
Right.
Pretty much.
Right.
And that is obviously that's the helicopter that it's the same designation when the president's on an Army plane. That's Army One.
Right.
The Marines fly the helicopter, so it's Marine One.
Right. And right now we've got those identical Boeing 747s, 200B, if you want to get specific.
Sure.
They have a lot. Like we said, they're decked out differently. We'll get to that in a second. But just being 747s, they have some specs that are pretty impressive.
Well, they're big. They're three stories, like all 747s. They are as tall as a six-story building.
Yep.
And as long as a city block. I guess it depends on what city you're in.
I think it does.
Just
or what
that.
Block you're on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Are you in the village? Are you uptown?
Right.
They each have four General Electric jet engines.
Right.
Do you want to read the jet engine number? Or does anyone out there know this?
They are GE engines CF6-80C2B1 jet engines, which are money engines. Each one produces 56,700 pounds of thrust, which, as we know from the antimatter spacecraft episode, produces 5 million G's, which a human can sustain indefinitely.
Yeah, we should point that out real quick. In show correction, G's measure acceleration. So, in theory, you would speed up really fast and then level out, so you wouldn't be experiencing G's that whole time like we thought.
Yep.
Erroneously.
Nice.
And thank you, physics people, for correcting us.
The 747s fly up to 700 miles per hour. They go as high as 45,100 feet. That's the ceiling maximum. What happens after that? Do they just break apart? Do they
I don't
just
know.
Disintegrate?
I don't think they disintegrate. I just think that's how high they can fly safely. It may do something to your body. I don't know.
Huh. And then they hold 53,611 gallons of fuel and a fully loaded, fully fueled 747. At least the Air Force One 747s can fly halfway around the world.
That's
before
right.
refueling.
We should go ahead and let the cat out of the bag then. Air Force One, however, can fly forever.
Yeah.
Because you can refuel in flight just like the big bomber planes. And they thought that would be a pretty swell idea in case the S was hitting the fan
yeah.
on the ground.
Which it did on September 11, 2001.
Just keep them up there.
Yeah. There wasn't that one, the one of the planes, United 93, that went down in Pennsylvania.
Right.
Wasn't that destined for the White House?
I think so.
And it was pretty hairy, even if it wasn't.
Sure.
They had no idea who was doing what or when it was going to get hit, so they said, just keep Bush in the air. And they did. And they could have for a very long time, not just with fuel, but with food as well.
Yeah. They have the ability to feed 100 people, and I think they have freezers down below that hold as much as 2,000 meals.
Yeah.
So they could have stayed up there for quite a long time.
Yeah. 2,000 meals, especially if they started throwing reporters out the door.
They're the first to go.
That's a bunch of meals right there.
That's true.
So, Chuck,
it does not have an escape pod, though.
Well, we don't know that it does or not.
The awesome movie Air Force One mm-hmm. with Harry Ford.
I have not seen it. Is it good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to see your president kicking terrorist butt with his hands?
Yeah, like he fights.
Yeah, of course he's like a former like Army Ranger or something in the movie.
Yeah.
We never get presents like that anymore, you know. So yeah, it was I enjoyed it.
So yeah, there, apparently an escape pod factors in.
Yeah.
We don't know if there's one on Air Force One, but there could be.
There's supposedly not, but they're not going to tell you that.
So I heard that Tom Clancy received a visit from I don't know who it was, maybe the NSA, the CIA, somebody, maybe the FBI. Came to his house and interviewed him because he had hit the nail on the head so closely when he described some classified nuclear sub in The Hunt for Red October. They wanted to know how he knew that, what the interior was like.
Interesting.
So it makes you wonder,
yeah,
you know, what he came up with for Air Force One.
Well, and that's one of the points of Air Force One is there's a lot of classified stuff. So while we know a lot of the parts, no one really knows the exact layout and configuration. I mean, people know, but they're sworn to secrecy or
right.
have signed on to secrecy.
Exactly. But so let's talk about what we do know. There's 4,000 square feet of interior space. That's substantial.
That's twice the size of my house.
There's three levels, just like on any 747.
Sure.
But the top level is for communications,
yeah.
generally. The mid-level is like the living quarters, and most of the bottom level is cargo space and apparently freezers for food.
Yeah, although I did see that the president's living quarters, bedroom, bathroom, workout room, and office, I heard they were under the cockpit. So maybe the cockpits?
I think the cockpit's on the third
On the third
level.
Deck? Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
The conference room is, I mean, they don't have unlimited space. So the conference room is also the president's dining room. And depending on the time of day, you know, some people may be in there. Other people might not be there. Maybe a meal. There may be some pretzels on the table. It depends.
That's right. Up to 70 passengers and 26 crew in total comfortably. I'm sure they could pack more people in there.
Which means they have four leftover meals at every meal.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, those add up.
Yeah, they do.
I'm saying you throw a reporter out, bam, that's three meals a day.
Well, what if he's a reporter that eats heavy?
Well, yeah. What if he's eating those other four meals?
You're right.
You know, Hunter Thompson flew on Air Force One.
Really?
One of the 707s. Yep, for Fear and Loathing on the campaign trail, 72.
Yeah. Well, because he was a legit journalist, so.
He was, well, for Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
But he got to interview Nixon one-on-one, but they told him all he could ask him about was football.
Did he ask him about football?
I'm sure.
He was probably like, that's fine with me.
Yeah.
Rum Diaries out.
Yeah. I'm not sure how I feel about it.
I'm going to go see it. I've heard it's an enjoyable mess.
Well, good.
But so was Hunter Thompson.
Yeah.
Getting back to Air Force One, the decks you can access up and down with these retractable stairs. And the impression I got is that they're retractable probably so they can seal off the levels, right? I mean, they don't say that in the article, but wouldn't that be the reason?
Yeah, I don't know why you didn't just come out and say it, but it's their interior stairs. So,
yeah,
if the president needed to just go hang out in the cockpit and get away from terrorists,
sure,
he was losing the fist fight.
Right.
I'm sure he could press a button and the stairs just go up and you're stuck on the second level.
And there are three exterior entrances as well, but the one we usually see is the photo op, obviously, when they wheel out the rolling staircase to the tarmac. And I think that's the front of the plane, the front
in,
middle.
Yeah, in the middle.
Yeah.
You know, Obama apparently, like, in San Francisco, there's a child crying on the tarmac, and he went right over to it and grabbed it and, like, calmed it down.
Oh, that's nice.
I think that was today.
Really?
Yeah.
And the mother, like, came up and started slapping him.
Like,
who are you?
My kid.
It's my child.
I'm a tea partier.
There's a staff area, Josh. There were two galleys, which... in this case, they're like seriously fully functioning kitchens, not the coffee pot and the little rolling thing of frozen meals.
Yeah.
Like we said, conference and dining room, and the crew can actually ride and sleep there as well.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, most of the general space for like the reporters and staff is like a really, really like the nicest first class plane you've ever been on.
I know. And that's just where they keep their reporters.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, you imagine that the president's suite is pretty nice. You've been on Elvis's 747 at Graceland?
Yeah, the Lisa Marie.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Yumi set off the alarm. She sat down on the bed.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the alarms just went beep.
She like rolling
beep,
around like, oh, this is so lovely.
Right? No, she was pretending like she was going to sit down and then passed like her center of balance and went, oh, God. And like.
And fell.
Actually sat down on the bed. Yeah.
That puts her in rare company. You know?
I know.
And what, she got kicked off?
Or did they came and she was already standing up by the time they came. We're like, we don't know what happened.
Right.
It started going off by itself.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
What else, Josh? Extensive electronics, big time. 85 telephones on board, two-way radios, fax, computer, Wi-Fi, 19 TVs. Phone system is just like secure as it is in the White House, apparently.
Yep.
Which, you know, it has to be.
I like the medical facility, which
yeah,
is scary. Creepy, weird, you know?
Let's hear it.
So there's an onboard medical facility. It has a fold-down operating table in case of emergency. It has ER equipment.
Yeah.
Fully stocked pharmacy for, you know, long flights. And there's a staff doctor that travels everywhere, logically.
Yeah.
With the president.
I imagine he's a surgeon. Like, he's probably, or she is probably well-versed in all fields, wouldn't you think? Like, I would want a field medic. A field surgeon on the plane.
I'm sure it's not just like, you know, a good time doctor or anything like that.
I'm sure
he's like probably has all sorts of like ghoulish training, like
I would think he can pull
a bullet out of your chest or
right,
whatever.
Or do open heart surgery on the fly if he needs to.
Yeah. Or if the baby you pick up and trying to calm has some sort of poison toxin on its skin.
Yeah, exactly.
He knows how to treat that.
That was an anthrax baby.
Right.
Some pretty cool things as far as defense goes, although we don't know much about it because it's not, you know, it's classified stuff.
We've reached the point where Tom Harris just started making stuff up.
He did. It is a defense, it is a military aircraft and is capable to withstand an attack. That's what they tell you. They won't tell you how.
No, but it has a thick shielding. I wonder if it's lead, but it has shielding to protect the wiring inside and the communications equipment from an electromagnetic pulse that a nuclear bomb gives off.
Not bad.
It can send out flares, which are pretty cool.
Well, that throws off a heat-seeking missile.
Exactly.
It sounds silly even until you start thinking about the heat-seeker coming at you.
Right.
And it has definitely has an electronic countermeasure, which will jam the radar. My feeling is that this bad boy has a 50 cal and some rockets that can pop out of different places. I'm just guessing. I have no idea if anyone from Homeland Security is listening. If I was a president, I would want some munitions aboard.
I would, too.
And I bet there are. But that's just a guess.
Right. And it can squirt like an oil slick after it so that any planes on its trail spin out.
It is a military operation every time this thing goes up in the air. By classification, they send out a crew at Andrews in Maryland. They check out the runway, like every inch of that thing before every flight. They send out a plane ahead of time that carries all the, a cargo plane that carries all the
motorcade
cars.
Yeah.
SUVs. It's pretty cool.
And if you are a plane junkie, that is a C-141 Starlifter cargo plane that carries the motorcade.
I bet it carries a lot of cars.
And if you are trying to fly into Andrews Air Force Base at the time when they're starting to prepare for Air Force One to take off or for Marine One to even show up,
yeah,
they're going to shoot you down.
Yeah.
They're authorized to shoot on site.
That's right. They're not going to mess around with that. What else, Josh? Oh, the football is always on board.
Yeah.
That is the briefcase that famously holds the nuclear codes. And an Air Force officer guards this football during the flight so the president, you know, he can eat without it being handcuffed to his arm.
Yeah.
And then passes it on to an Army officer once they reach the ground.
Passes off the football.
That's right.
And then lastly, that crew. So first of all, the crew on board, it has two crews. It has the flight crew and the steward crew. And they...
Quite an honor.
Well, yeah. They also screen these people. It's not just like, you've been really good, so here's your assignment.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they also have to go through your background and your family's background. Like, you undergo some pretty serious background checks because you're on board this flight with the president.
Yeah.
And he's pretty vulnerable, including by not just anthrax, baby, but poison food attack.
Yeah.
And where do they get this food? They get it from a local market that's picked at random, that has no idea that these people are coming or who they are, because they just wear like Dockers and maybe like a members only jacket.
Right.
That's what they wear to go shopping for the food.
Uh-huh. And they mix it up, like you said, so they never know where the food is coming from. And, you know, like I said, it's an honor. It's a rare privilege. And I love how in the article it says every president since Truman has formed close relationships and connections with the flight crew. I wonder before that, were they just ignored?
Right.
Did FDR
Roosevelt
just blow
like, don't
people
look at me.
Off? Look away. But apparently Harry Truman ushered in chumming up with these people because
he was from Missouri.
He's from Missouri, and when you get the president on board Air Force One, that is when you're going to find a more relaxed, more human president.
Especially if you have a good flight doctor.
That's right.
The end.
The end.
You got any more?
Nope.
That's Air Force One. Remember, we work for a website called HowStuffWorks.com, and every single article, with the exception of what? Maybe one or two. Every single episode that we record has been based on an article on the site. And if you want to read more about Air Force One, especially if you like your HowStuffWorks articles to be filled with conjecture, you're going to love this one. Just type in Air Force One in the handy search bar at HowStuffWorks.com. That's going to bring up the article, and I said handy and search bar, which means it's going to be a particularly good listener mail.
That's right, Josh. This is going to be, I'm going to call this Berenice follow-up. We did our now annual reading. You got to do it twice for it to be annual.
Yeah, but first is just inaugural.
People say first annual, though.
It's because they're dumb.
It's just not right. So our now second annual Halloween reading, where we read royalty-free works of literature that are creepy.
Yeah.
And
people like this one.
Yeah, I think so.
I thought we'd get some like, well, I didn't like that one. Not one person has said it.
Not so far, at least. So this year we read Berenice by Edgar Allan Poe, and we had a couple of follow-ups. You remember at the end we sort of...
tried to figure out what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sean writes in, I'm sure you've gotten a few of these. As I read the story, Berenice had a kind of epilepsy that left her comatose and in a death-like state. From this quote, a trance very nearly resembling positive dissolution. Makes sense. Of course, when you're reading this, sometimes it escapes you because you're trying to read it well.
Right.
So everyone did think she was dead, and she was buried. He didn't hallucinate anything. In his mania, he dug her up, ripped out her teeth, and in that act woke her from her trance, hence the screaming that wounded but alive Berenice and the blood all over our narrator. Pro, she didn't wake up buried alive to die a slow, suffocating death. Con, definitely no more steak dinners in her future. That's from Sean. And then the second one.
I have to say the protagonist loved her enough as a friend.
He would have cut her steak and...
Or chewed it up and spit it in her mouth.
Ooh. This is from Julie, and Julie, remember, I didn't have the French translation, and we had quite a few people send it in, but hers was the best version, I thought. Just finished listening to Berenice. Thanks for keeping up the creepy short story tradition. I have to admit, I was more than a little excited to hear that you didn't know the meaning of the French phrases, because I can finally use my random French degree. Here's a translation. Of Mademoiselle Saul, it had been well said that all her steps were feelings, and of Berenice, I more seriously believed that all her teeth were ideas.
The ideas!
So here's what Julie thinks it means. Mademoiselle Saul was a famous French ballet dancer in the 1730s.
Uh-huh.
Someone, perhaps her great admirer, Voltaire, you've heard him, probably described her graceful ballet as creating feelings with every step. Egeus was so overwhelmed with all the imaginative thoughts...
That's the protagonist.
Yeah. Which were provoked by her teeth that he felt like each tooth was the source of a new idea. I think she's right on the money. Personally, I think old Eddie was showing off and probably pretty tripped out, but that's part of his charm, and that is from Julie.
That's nice. Those are two, like, top-notch...
Stellar.
...fan mails. They weren't even fan mails. Those were listener mails.
That's right.
Yeah.
There are no fans.
No. They're just smart people. If you're a smart person who wants to tell us something you think we'd like to know, we like to know just about anything, so that's cool. Send it in. Any thoughts you have. Any ramblings. Although we did get one recently. Did you notice it? I can't remember what it was about, but it was a rambling.
Was it?
Yeah, I don't remember what it was. But it was probably from a smart person because it was the stuff you should know, listener.
That's right.
You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can go onto our Facebook, facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. And you can also send us a good old-fashioned email at stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?